Industrious for a fawn, I noted. Don grinned. Hey, man, slacking is hard work. We've got a long walk, Lavinia said. Best keep moving. I tried not to groan. Another nighttime hike with Lavinia had not been on my evening's agenda. But I had to admit, I was curious. What had she and Don been arguing about before? Why had she wanted to talk to me earlier? And where were we going? With her stormy eyes and the black cap over her hair, Lavinia looked troubled and determined. Less like a gawky giraffe, more like a tense gazelle. I'd seen her father, Sergei Asimov, perform once with the Moscow Ballet. He'd had that exact expression on his face before launching into a grand jeté. I wanted to ask Lavinia what was going on, but her posture made it clear she was not in the mood for conversation. Not yet, anyway. We hiked in silence out of the valley and down into the streets of Berkeley. It must have been about midnight by the time we got to People's Park. I had not been there since 1969, when I'd stopped by to experience some groovy hippie music and flower power, and instead found myself in the middle of a riot. The police officers' tear gas, shotguns, and batons had definitely not been groovy. It had taken all of my godly restraint not to reveal my divine form and blast everyone within a 6-mile radius to cinders. Now, decades later, the scruffy park looked like it was still suffering from the aftermath. The worn brown lawn was strewn with piles of discarded clothing and cardboard signs, bearing hand-painted slogans like "Green Space, Not Dorm Space," and "Save Our Park." Several tree stumps held potted plants and beaded necklaces, like shrines to the fallen. Trash cans overflowed. Homeless people slept on benches or fussed over shopping carts full of their worldly belongings. At the far end of the square, occupying a raised plywood stage, was the largest sit-in of dryads and fauns I'd ever seen. It made total sense to me that fauns would inhabit People's Park. They could laze around, panhandle, eat leftover food out of the garbage bins, and no one would bat an eye. The dryads were more of a surprise. At least 2 dozen of them were present. Some, I guessed, were the spirits of local eucalyptus and redwood trees, but most, given their sickly appearances, must have been dryads of the park's long-suffering shrubs, grasses, and weeds. Not that I am judging weed dryads. I've known some very fine crabgrasses. The fauns and dryads sat in a wide circle as if preparing for a sing-along around an invisible campfire. I got the feeling they were waiting for us, for me, to start the music. I was already nervous enough. Then I spotted a familiar face and nearly jumped out of my zombie-infected skin. Peaches? Meg's demon baby Karpos bared his fangs and responded,
"Peaches!"
His tree branch wings had lost a few leaves. His curly green hair was dead brown at the tips, and his lamp-like eyes didn't shine as brightly as I remembered. He must have undergone quite an ordeal tracking us to Northern California. But his growl was still intimidating enough to make me fear for my bladder control. "Where have you been?" I demanded.
"Peaches."
I felt foolish for asking. Of course he had been Peaches, probably because Peaches, Peaches, and Peaches. "Does Meg know you're here? How did you..." Lavinia gripped my shoulder. "Hey, Apollo, time is short. Peaches filled us in on what he saw in Southern California, but he arrived there too late to help. He busted his wings to get up here as fast as he could. He wants you to tell the group firsthand what happened in SoCal." I scanned the faces in the crowd. The nature spirits looked scared, apprehensive, and angry. but mostly tired of being angry. I'd seen that look a lot among dryads in these latter days of human civilization. There was only so much pollution your average plant can breathe, drink, and get tangled in her branches before starting to lose all hope. Now Lavinia wanted me to break their spirits completely by relating what had happened to their brethren in Los Angeles, and what fiery destruction was coming their way tomorrow. In other words, she wanted to get me killed by a mob of angry shrubs. I gulped. Here, this might help. Lavinia slung her backpack off her shoulder. I hadn't paid much attention to how bulky it looked, since she was always tromping around with lots of gear. When she opened it, the last thing I expected her to pull out was my ukulele, newly polished and restrung. How? I asked, as she placed it in my hands. I stole it from your room, she said, as if this was obviously what friends did for each other. You were asleep forever. I took it to a buddy of mine who repairs instruments. Marilyn, daughter of Euterpe. You know, the muse of music. I know Euterpe. Of course. Her specialty is flutes, not ukuleles. But the action on this fretboard is perfect now. Marilyn must be... I'm so... I realized I was rambling. Thank you. Lavinia fixed me with her stare, silently commanding me to make her effort worthwhile. She stepped back and joined the circle of nature spirits. I strummed. Lavinia was right. The instrument helped. Not to hide behind, as I discovered. One cannot hide behind a ukulele. But it lent confidence to my voice. After a few mournful minor chords, I began to sing The Fall of Jason Grace, as I had when we first arrived at Camp Jupiter. The song quickly morphed, however. Like all good performers, I adapted the material to my audience. I sang of the wildfires and droughts that had scorched Southern California. I sang of the brave cacti and satyrs from the cistern in Palm Springs, who had struggled valiantly to find the source of the destruction. I sang of the dryads Agave and Moneymaker, both gravely injured in the burning maze, and how Moneymaker had died in the arms of Aloe Vera. I added some hopeful stanzas about Meg and the rebirth of the warrior dryad Meliae, how we destroyed the burning maze and given SoCal's environment at least a fighting chance to heal. But I couldn't hide the dangers that faced us. I described what I had seen in my dreams, the yachts approaching with their fiery mortars, the hellish devastation they would rain upon the entire Bay Area. After strumming my final chord, I looked up. Green tears glistened in the dryad's eyes. Fawns wept openly. Peaches turned to the crowd and growled, "Peaches!" This time, I was fairly sure I understood his meaning. See? I told you so. Don sniffled, wiping his eyes with what looked like a used burrito wrapper. It's true, then. It's happening. Faunus protect us. Lavinia dabbed away her own tears. Thanks, Apollo. As if I'd done her a favor. Why then did I feel like I just kicked each and every one of these nature spirits right in the taproots? I'd spent a lot of time worrying about the fate of New Rome and Camp Jupiter, the oracles, my friends, and myself. But these hackberries and crabgrasses deserved to live just as much. They too were facing death. They were terrified. If the emperors launched their weapons, they stood no chance. The homeless mortals with their shopping carts in People's Park would also burn, right along with the legionnaires. Their lives were worth no less. The mortals might not understand the disaster. They'd attribute it to runaway wildfires or whatever other causes their brains could comprehend. but I would know the truth. If this vast, weird, beautiful expanse of the California coast burned, it would be because I had failed to stop my enemies. Okay, guys, Lavinia continued, after taking a moment to compose herself. You heard him. The emperors will be here by tomorrow evening.
But that gives us no time,
said a redwood dryad.
If they do to the Bay Area what they did to LA.
I could feel the fear ripple through the crowd like a cold wind.
The Legion will fight them though, right?
Afon asked nervously.
I mean, they might win.
Come on, Reginald, a dryad chided. You want to depend on mortals to protect us? When has that ever worked out? The others muttered assent. To be fair, Lavinia cut in. Frank and Reyna are trying. They're sending a small team of commandos out to intercept the ships. Michael Kahale and few other hand-picked demigods. But I'm not optimistic. I hadn't heard anything about that, I said. How did you find out? She raised her pink eyebrows like, please. And of course, Lester here will try to summon godly help with some super secret ritual, but she didn't need to say the rest. She wasn't optimistic about that either. So what will you do? I asked. What can you do? I didn't mean to sound critical. I just couldn't imagine any options. The Fawn's panicky expressions seemed to hint at their game plan. Get bus tickets to Portland, Oregon immediately. But that wouldn't help the dryads. They were literally rooted to their native soil. Perhaps they could go into deep hibernation, the way the dryads in the south had. But would that be enough to enable them to weather a firestorm? I'd heard stories about certain species of plants that germinated and thrived after devastating fires swept across the landscape, but I doubted most had that ability. Honestly, I didn't know much about dryad life cycles or how they protected themselves from climate disasters. Perhaps if I'd spent more time over the centuries talking to them and less time chasing them. Wow, I really didn't even know myself anymore.
We have a lot to discuss, said one of the dryads.
Peaches,
agreed Peaches. He looked at me with a clear message. Go away now. I had so many questions for him. Why had he been absent so long? Why was he here and not with Meg? I suspected I wouldn't get any answers tonight. At least nothing beyond snarls, bites, and the word peaches. I thought about what the dryad had said about not trusting mortals to solve nature spirit problems. Apparently, that included me. I had delivered my message. Now I was dismissed. My heart was already heavy, and Meg's state of mind was so fragile. I didn't know how I could break the news to her that her diapered little peach demon had become a rogue fruit. Let's get you back to camp, Lavinia said to me. You've got a big day tomorrow. We left Don behind with the other nature spirits, all deep in crisis mode conversation, and retraced our steps down Telegraph Avenue. After a few blocks, I got up the courage to ask, what will they do? Lavinia stirred as if she'd forgotten I was there. You mean, what will we do? 'Cause I'm with them. A lump formed in my throat. Lavinia, you're scaring me. What are you planning?
I tried to leave it alone,
she muttered. In the glow of the street lamps, the wisps of pink hair that had escaped her cap seemed to float around her head like cotton candy. After what we saw in the tomb, Bobby and the others. After you described what we're facing tomorrow. Lavinia, please.
I can't fall into line like a good soldier. Me locking shields and marching off to die with everybody else? That's not going to help anybody.
But
It's best you don't ask. Her growl was almost as intimidating as Peach's. And it's definitely best that you not say anything to anybody about tonight. Now come on. The rest of the way back, she ignored my questions. She seemed to have a dark, bubblegum-scented cloud hanging over her head. She got me safely past the centuries, under the wall, and back to the coffee shop, before she slipped away into the dark without even a goodbye. Perhaps I should have stopped her, raised the alarm, gotten her arrested. But what good would that have done? It seemed to me Lavinia had never been comfortable in the Legion. After all, she spent much of her time looking for secret exits and hidden trails out of the valley. Now she'd finally snapped. I had a sinking feeling that I would never see her again. She'd be on the next bus to Portland with a few dozen fawns, and as much as I wanted to be angry about that, I could only feel sad. In her place, would I have done any differently? When I got back to our guest room, Meg was passed out, snoring, her glasses dangling from her fingers, bedsheets wadded around her feet. I tucked her in as best I could. If she was having any bad dreams about her peach spirit friend plotting with the local dryads only a few miles away, I couldn't tell. Tomorrow I'd have to decide what to say to her. Tonight I'd let her sleep. I crawled into my own cot, sure that I'd be tossing and turning until morning. Instead, I passed out immediately. When I woke, the early morning sunlight was in my face. Meg's cot was empty. I realized I'd slept like the dead. No dreams, no visions. That did not comfort me. When the nightmares go silent, that usually means something else is coming. Something even worse. I dressed and gathered my supplies, trying not to think about how tired I was or how much my gut hurt. Then I grabbed a muffin and a coffee from Bombilo and went out to find my friends. Today, one way or another, the fate of New Rome would be decided. Chapter 23. In my pickup truck, with my dogs and my weapons, and this fool, Lester. Raina and Meg were waiting for me at the camp's front gates, though I barely recognized the former. In place of her praetor's regalia, she wore blue running shoes and skinny jeans, a long-sleeved copper tee, and a maroon sweater wrap. With her hair pulled back in a braided whip, and her face lightly brushed with makeup, she could have passed for one of the many thousands of Bay Area college students that nobody would think twice about. I suppose that was the point. What? She asked me. I realized I'd been staring. Nothing. Meg snorted. She was dressed in her usual green dress, yellow leggings, and red high tops, so she could blend in with the many thousands of Bay Area first graders, except for her 12-year-old's height, her gardening belt, and the pink button pinned to her collar that displayed a stylized unicorn's head with crossed bones underneath. I wondered if she'd bought it in a New Rome gift shop or somehow gotten it specially made. Either possibility was unsettling. Raina spread her hands. I do have civilian clothes, Apollo. Even with the mist helping to obscure things, walking through San Francisco in full Legionnaire armor can attract some funny looks. No, yeah. You look great. I mean, good. Why were my palms sweating? I mean, can we go now? Raina put two fingers in her mouth and let loose a taxicab whistle so shrill it cleared out my eustachian tubes. From inside the fort, her two metal greyhounds came running, barking like small weapons fire. Oh, good, I said, trying to suppress my panic and run instinct. Your dogs are coming. Raina smirked.
Well, they'd get upset if I drove to San Francisco without them.
Drove?
I was about to say in what, when I heard a honk from the direction of the city. A battered, bright red Chevy 4x4 rumbled down a road usually reserved for marching legionnaires and elephants. At the wheel was Hazel Levesque, with Frank Zhang riding shotgun. They pulled up next to us. The vehicle had barely stopped moving when Orem and Argentum leaped into the bed of the truck, their metal tongues lolling and tails wagging. Hazel climbed out of the cab. All gassed up, Praetor. Thank you, Centurion. Reyna smiled. How are the driving lessons coming along?
Good. I didn't even run into Terminus this time.
Progress, Reyna agreed. Frank came around from the passenger's side.
Yep, Hazel will be ready for public roads in no time.
I had many things to ask. Where did they keep this truck? Was there a gas station in New Rome? Why had I been hiking so much if it was possible to drive? Meg beat me to the real question.
Do I get to ride in back with the dogs?
No, ma'am, said Reyna. You'll sit in the cab with your seatbelt on.
Aw.
Meg ran off to pet the dogs. Frank gave Reyna a bear hug, without turning into a bear.
Be careful out there, all right?
Reyna didn't seem to know what to do with this show of affection. Her arms went stiff. Then she awkwardly patted her fellow Praetor on the back. You two, she said. Any word on the strike force?
They left before dawn,
Frank said.
Kahale felt good about it, but...
He shrugged, as if to say their anti-yacht commando mission was now in the hands of the gods, which, as a former god, I can tell you was not reassuring. Reyna turned to Hazel. And the zombie pickets.
Ready,
Hazel said. If Tarquin's hordes come from the same direction as before, they're in for some nasty surprises. I also set traps along the other approaches to the city. Hopefully we can stop them before they're in hand-to-hand range, so... She hesitated, apparently unwilling to finish her sentence. I thought I understood. So we don't have to see their faces. If the Legion had to confront a wave of undead comrades, it would be much better to destroy them at a distance, without the anguish of having to recognize former friends.
I just wish...
Hazel shook her head. Well, I still worry Tarquin has something else planned. I should be able to figure it out, but... She tapped her forehead as if she wanted to reset her brain. I could sympathize.
You've done plenty, Frank assured her. If they throw surprises at us, we'll adapt.
Reyna nodded. Okay then, we're off. Don't forget to stock the catapults.
Of course, Frank said.
And double check with the quartermaster about those flaming barricades?
Of course.
And Reyna stopped herself. You know what you're doing. Sorry. Frank grinned.
Just bring us whatever we need to summon that godly help. We'll keep the camp in one piece until you get back.
Hazel studied Reyna's outfit with concern.
Your sword's in the truck. Don't you want to take a shield or something?
Nah, I've got my cloak. It'll turn aside most weapons. Reyna brushed the collar of her sweater wrap. Instantly, it unfurled into her usual purple cape. Frank's smile faded.
Does my cloak do that?
See you guys.
Reyna climbed behind the wheel.
Wait, does my cloak deflect weapons?
Frank called after us.
Does mine turn into a sweater wrap?
As we pulled away, I could see Frank Zhang in the rearview mirror, intently studying the stitching of his cape. Our first challenge of the morning, merging onto the Bay Bridge.
Getting out of Camp Jupiter had been no problem. A well-hidden dirt road led from the valley up into the hills, eventually depositing us on the residential streets of East Oakland. From there, we took Highway 24 until it merged with Interstate 580. Then the real fun began. The morning commuters had apparently not gotten word that we were on a vital mission to save the greater metropolitan area. They stubbornly refused to get out of our way. Perhaps we should have taken public transportation, but I doubted they let killer dog automatons ride the BART trains. Reyna tapped her fingers on the wheel, mumbling along to Tego Calderon lyrics on the truck's ancient CD player. I enjoyed reggaeton as much as the next Greek god, but it was perhaps not the music I would have chosen to soothe my nerves on the morning of a quest. I found it a bit too peppy for my pre-combat jitters. Sitting between us, Meg rummaged through the seeds in her gardener's belt. During our battle in the tomb, she'd told us lots of packages had opened and gotten mixed up. Now she was trying to figure out which seeds were which. This meant she would occasionally hold up a seed and stare at it until it burst into its mature form, dandelion, tomato, eggplant, sunflower. Soon the cab smelled like the gardening section at Home Depot. I had not told Meg about seeing peaches. I wasn't even sure how to start the conversation. Hey, did you know your carpos is holding clandestine meetings with the fawns and crabgrasses in People's Park? The longer I waited to say something, the harder it became. I told myself it wasn't a good idea to distract Meg during an important quest. I wanted to honor Lavinia's wishes that I not blab. True, I hadn't seen Lavinia that morning before we left, but maybe her plans weren't as nefarious as I thought. Maybe she wasn't actually halfway to Oregon by now. In reality, I didn't speak because I was a coward. I was afraid to enrage the two dangerous young women I rode with, one of whom could have me ripped apart by a pair of metal greyhounds, while the other could cause cabbages to grow out of my nose. We inched our way across the bridge, Reyna finger-tapping to the beat of El que sabe, sabe, he who knows, knows. I was 75% sure there was no hidden message in Reyna's choice of songs. When we get there, she said, we'll have to park at the base of the hill and hike up. The area around Sutro Tower is restricted. You've decided the tower itself is our target, I said. Not Mount Sutro behind it. Can't be sure, obviously, but I double-checked Thalia's list of trouble spots. The tower was on there. I waited for her to elaborate. Thalia's what? Reyna blinked. Didn't I tell you about that? So Thalia and the Hunters of Artemis, you know they keep a running list of places where they've seen unusual monstrous activity, stuff they can't quite explain. Sutro Tower is one of them. Thalia sent me her list of locations for the Bay Area so Camp Jupiter can keep an eye on them. How many trouble spots? Meg asked. Can we visit all of them? Reyna nudged her playfully. I like your spirit, killer. But there are dozens in San Francisco alone. The Legion. We try to keep an eye on them all, but it's a lot. Especially recently. With the battles, I thought, and the deaths. I wondered about the small hesitation in Reyna's voice when she said we, and then clarified that she meant the Legion. I wondered what other we's Reyna Avila Ramirez Arellano felt part of. Certainly I had never imagined her in civilian clothes, driving a battered pickup truck, taking her metal greyhounds for a hike. And she'd been in touch with Thalia Grace, my sister's lieutenant, leader of the Hunters of Artemis. I hated the way that made me feel jealous. How do you know Thalia? I tried to sound nonchalant. Judging from Meg's cross-eyed look, I failed miserably. Reyna didn't seem to notice. She changed lanes, trying to make headway through the traffic. In the back, Aurum and Argentum barked with joy, thrilling in the adventure. Thalia and I fought Orion together in Puerto Rico, she said. The Amazons and hunters both lost a lot of good women. That sort of thing. Shared experience. Anyway, yeah, we've kept in touch. How? The communication lines are all down. Letters, she said. Letters? I seem to remember those, back from around the days of vellum and wax seals. You mean when you write something by hand on paper, put it in an envelope, stick a stamp on it, and mail it, right? I mean, it can be weeks or months between letters, but Thalia's a good pen pal. I tried to fathom that. Many descriptions came to mind when I thought about Thalia Grace. Pen pal was not one of them. Where do you even mail the letters to? I asked. The hunters are constantly on the move. They have a P.O. box in Wyoming, and why are we talking about this? Meg pinched a seed between her fingers. A geranium exploded into bloom. Is that where your dogs went, searching for Thalia? I didn't see how she'd made that connection, but Reyna nodded. Just after you arrived, Reyna said. I wrote Thalia about, you know, Jason. I knew it was a long shot that she'd get the message in time, so I sent Aurum and Argentum out looking for her too, in case the hunters were in the area. No luck. I imagined what could happen if Thalia received Reyna's letter. Would she come charging into Camp Jupiter at the head of the hunters, ready to help us fight the Emperor's and Tarquin's undead hordes? Or would she turn her wrath on me? Thalia had already bailed me out of trouble once in Indianapolis. By way of thanks, I'd gotten her brother killed in Santa Barbara. I doubted anyone would object if a stray hunter's arrow found me as its target during the fighting. I shivered, thankful for the slowness of the U.S. Postal Service. We made our way past Treasure Island, the anchor of the Bay Bridge midway between Oakland and San Francisco. I thought about Caligula's fleet, which would be passing this island later tonight, ready to unload its troops, and if necessary, its arsenal of Greek firebombs on the unsuspecting East Bay. I cursed the slowness of the U.S. Postal Service. So, I said, making a second attempt at nonchalance, are you and Thalia, Reyna raised an eyebrow. Involved romantically? Well, Oh, very smooth, Apollo. Have I mentioned I was once the god of poetry? Reyna rolled her eyes. If I had a denarius for every time I got that question. Aside from the fact that Thalia is in the hunters and thus sworn to celibacy, why does a strong friendship always have to progress to romance? Thalia's an excellent friend. Why would I risk messing that up? That was a rhetorical question, Reyna added. I do not need a response. I know what rhetorical means. I made a mental note to double-check the word's definition with Socrates the next time I was in Greece. Then I remembered Socrates was dead. I only thought. I love this song, Meg interrupted. Turn it up. I doubted Meg had the slightest interest in Tego Calderon, but her intervention may have saved my life. Reyna cranked up the volume, thus ending my attempt at death by casual conversation. We stayed silent the rest of the way into the city, listening to Tego Calderon singing Punto y Aparte, and Reyna's greyhounds jubilantly barking like semi-auto clips discharged on New Year's Eve. Chapter 24.
stick my godly face where it doesn't belong, and Venus, I hate you. For such a populated area, San Francisco had a surprising number of wilderness pockets. We parked on a dead-end road at the base of the tower's hill. To our right, a field of rocks and weeds offered a multi-million-dollar view of the city. To our left, the incline was so heavily forested, you could almost use the eucalyptus trunks as climbing rungs. From the hill's summit, perhaps a quarter mile above us, Sutro Tower soared into the fog, its red and white pylons and crossbeams forming a giant tripod that reminded me uncomfortably of the Delphic Oracle seat, or the scaffolding for a funeral pyre. There's a relay station at the base, Reyna pointed toward the hilltop. We may have to deal with mortal guards, fences, barbed wire, that kind of thing, plus whatever Tarquin might have waiting for us.
Neat,
Meg said.
Let's go.
The greyhounds needed no encouragement. They charged uphill, plowing through the underbrush. Meg followed, clearly determined to rip her clothes on as many brambles and thorn bushes as possible. Reyna must have noticed my pained expression as I contemplated the climb. Don't worry, she said. We can take it slow. Aurum and Argentum know to wait for me at the top. But does Meg? I imagined my young friend charging alone into a relay station filled with guards, zombies, and other neat surprises. Good point, Reyna said. Let's take it medium then. I did my best, which entailed lots of wheezing, sweating, and leaning against trees to rest. My archery skills may have improved, my music was getting better, but my stamina was still 100% Lester. At least Reyna didn't ask me how my wound felt. The answer was somewhere south of horrible. When I'd gotten dressed that morning, I had avoided looking at my gut, but I couldn't ignore the throbbing pain or the deep purple tendrils of infection now licking at the bases of my wrists and my neck, which not even my long-sleeve hoodie could hide. Occasionally, my vision blurred, turning the world a sickly shade of eggplant. I would hear a distant whisper in my head, the voice of Tarquin, beckoning me to return to his tomb. So far, the voice was just an annoyance, but I had the feeling it would get stronger until I could no longer ignore it or fail to obey it. I told myself I just needed to hang in there until tonight. Then I could summon godly help and get myself cured. Or I'd die in battle. At this point, either option was preferable to a painful, lingering slide into undeath. Reyna hiked alongside me, using her sheathed sword to poke the ground as if she expected to find landmines. Ahead of us, through the dense foliage, I saw no sign of Meg or the greyhounds, but I could hear them rustling through leaves and stepping on twigs. If any sentries waited for us at the summit, we would not be taking them by surprise. So, Reyna said, apparently satisfied that Meg was out of earshot, are you going to tell me? My pulse accelerated to a tempo suitable for a parade march. Tell you what? She raised her eyebrows like, really? Ever since you showed up at camp, you've been acting jumpy. You stare at me like I'm the one who got infected, then you won't make eye contact. You stammer. You fidget. I do notice these things. Ah. I climbed a few more steps. Perhaps if I concentrated on the hike, Reyna would let the matter drop. Look, she said, I'm not going to bite you. Whatever is going on, I'd rather not have it hanging over your head or mine when we go into battle. I swallowed, wishing I had some of Lavinia's bubblegum to cut the taste of poison and fear. Reyna made a good point.
Whether I died today or turned into a zombie, or somehow managed to live, I would rather face my fate with my conscience clear and no secrets. For one thing, I should tell Meg about my encounter with Peaches. I should also tell her I didn't hate her. In fact, I liked her pretty well. All right. I loved her. She was the bratty little sister I'd never had. As for Reyna, I didn't know whether I was or wasn't the answer to her destiny. Venus might curse me for leveling with the Praetor, but I had to tell Reyna what was bothering me. I was unlikely to get another chance. "It's about Venus," I said. Reyna's expression hardened. It was her turn to stare at the hillside and hope the conversation went away. "I see. She told me her little prediction." Reyna spat out the words like inedible seeds. "No mortal or demigod will ever heal my heart." "I didn't mean to pry," I promised. "It's just..." "Oh, I believe you. Venus loves her gossip. I doubt there's anyone at Camp Jupiter who doesn't know what she told me in Charleston." "I... really?" Reyna broke a dry branch off a shrub and flicked it into the underbrush. "I went on that quest with Jason. What, 2 years ago? Venus took one look at me and decided, I don't know. I was broken. I needed romantic healing. Whatever. I wasn't back at camp a full day before the whispering started. Nobody would admit that they knew, but they knew. The looks I got. Oh, poor Reyna. The innocent suggestions about who I should date. She didn't sound angry. It was more like weighed down and weary. I remembered Frank Zheng's concern about how long Reyna had shouldered the burdens of leadership, how he wished he could do more to relieve her. Apparently, a lot of Legionnaires wanted to help Reyna. Not all of that help had been welcome or useful. "The thing is," she continued, "I'm not broken." "Of course not." "So why have you been acting nervous? What does Venus have to do with it? Please don't tell me it's pity."
No,
nothing like that." Up ahead, I heard Meg romping through the brush. Occasionally, she would say,
"Hey, how's it going?"
in a conversational tone, as if passing an acquaintance on the street. I supposed she was talking to the local dryads. Either that or the theoretical guards we were looking out for were very bad at their jobs. "You see," I fumbled for words. "Back when I was a god, Venus gave me a warning about you." Aurum and Argentum burst through the bushes to check on Mom, their toothy smiles gleaming like freshly polished bear traps.
"Oh, good. I had an audience."
Reyna patted Aurum absently on the head. "Go on, Lester." The marching band in my bloodstream was now doing double-time maneuvers.
"Well, I walked into the throne room one day, and Venus was studying this hologram of you, and I asked, just completely casually, mind you, who's that? And she told me your fate, I guess. The thing about healing your heart. Then she just tore into me. She forbade me to approach you. She said if I ever tried to woo you, she would curse me forever. It was totally unnecessary and also embarrassing."
Reyna's expression remained as smooth and hard as marble.
"Woo. Is that even a thing anymore? Do people still woo?"
I don't know. "But I stayed away from you. You'll notice I stayed away. Not that I would have done otherwise without the warning. I didn't even know who you were."
She stepped over a fallen log and offered me a hand, which I declined. I didn't like the way her greyhounds were grinning at me.
So in other words, she said, what? You're worried Venus will strike you dead because you're invading my personal space? I really wouldn't worry about that, Lester. You're not a god anymore. You're obviously not trying to woo me. We're comrades on a quest. She had to hit me where it hurt. Right in the truth. Yes, I said. But I was thinking, why was this so hard? I had spoken of love to women before, and men, and gods, and nymphs, and the occasional attractive statue before I realized it was a statue. Why then were the veins in my neck threatening to explode? I thought if it would help, I continued, perhaps it was destiny that, well, you see, I'm not a god anymore, as you said, and Venus was quite specific that I shouldn't stick my godly face anywhere near you. But Venus, I mean, her plans are always twisting and turning. She may have been practicing reverse psychology, so to speak. If we were meant to, I could help you. Raina stopped. Her dogs tilted their metal heads toward her, perhaps trying to gauge their master's mood. Then they regarded me, their jeweled eyes cold and accusatory. Lester, Raina sighed, what in Tartarus are you saying? I'm not in the mood for riddles. Then maybe I'm the answer, I blurted. To healing your heart. I could, you know, be your boyfriend. As Lester, if you wanted, you and me, you know, like, yeah. I was absolutely certain that up on Mount Olympus, the other Olympians all had their phones out and were filming me to post on YouTerpyTube. Raina stared at me long enough for the marching band in my circulatory system to play a complete stanza of "You're a Grand Old Flag." Her eyes were dark and dangerous. Her expression was unreadable, like the outer surface of an explosive device. She was going to murder me. No, she would order her dogs to murder me. By the time Meg rushed to my aid, it would be too late. Or worse, Meg would help Raina bury my remains and no one would be the wiser. When they returned to camp, the Romans would ask, what happened to Apollo? Who? Raina would say, oh, that guy, don't know, we lost him. Oh, well, the Romans would reply, and that would be that. Raina's mouth tightened into a grimace. She bent over, gripping her knees. Her body began to shake. Oh, gods, what had I done? Perhaps I should comfort her, hold her in my arms. Perhaps I should run for my life. Why was I so bad at romance? Raina made a squeaking sound, then a sort of sustained whimper. I really had hurt her. Then she straightened, tears streaming down her face, and burst into laughter. The sound reminded me of water rushing over a creek bed that had been dry for ages. Once she started, she couldn't seem to stop. She doubled over, stood upright again, leaned against a tree, and looked at her dogs as if to share the joke. Oh, my gods, she wheezed. She managed to restrain her mirth long enough to blink at me through the tears, as if to make sure I was really there and she'd heard me correctly. You, me, ha 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 ha. Aurum and Argentum seemed just as confused as I was. They glanced at each other, then at me, as if to say, what have you done to our mom? If you broke her, we will kill you. Raina's laughter rolled across the hillside. Once I got over my initial shock, my ears began to burn. Over the last few months, I had experienced quite a few humiliations, but being laughed at, to my face, when I wasn't trying to be funny,
That was a new low.
I don't see why. I wasn't saying that.
Stop, please. You're killing me.
She doesn't mean that literally. I yelped for the dog's benefit.
And you thought...
Reyna didn't seem to know where to point. At me, herself, the sky.
Seriously?
Wait, my dogs would have attacked if you were lying. Oh, wow.
So that's a no then,
I huffed.
Fine, I get it. You can stop.
Her laughter turned to asthmatic squeaking as she wiped her eyes.
Apollo, when you were a god.
She struggled for breath.
Like,
with your powers and good looks and whatever.
Say no more.
Naturally, you would have.
That would have been a solid, absolute hard pass. No!
I gaped. I am astonished.
And as Lester, I mean, you're sweet and kind of adorkable at times.
Adorkable?
At times.
But wow, still a big time no.
A lesser mortal would have crumbled to dust on the spot, their self-esteem imploding. In that moment, as she rejected me utterly, Reyna had never seemed more beautiful and desirable.
Funny how that works.
Meg emerged from the hackberry bushes.
Guys, there's nobody up there, but...
She froze, taking in the scene, then glanced at the greyhounds for explanation.
Don't ask us,
their metal faces seemed to say. Mom is never like this.
What's so funny?
Meg asked. A smile tugged at her mouth, as if she wanted to join in the joke.
Which was, of course, me.
Nothing.
Reyna held her breath for a moment, then lost it again in a fit of giggles.
Reyna Avila Ramirez Arellano, daughter of Bellona, feared praetor of the 12th Legion, giggling.
At last, she seemed to regain some of her self-control. Her eyes danced with humor. Her cheeks glowed beet red. Her smile made her seem like a different person. A happy, different person.
Thanks, Lester, she said. I needed that.
Now let's go find the soundless god, shall we? She led the way up the hill, holding her ribs as if her chest still hurt from too much hilarity. Then and there, I decided that if I ever became a god again, I would rearrange the order of my vengeance list. Venus had just moved up to the top spot.
Chapter 25. Frozen in terror, like a god in the headlights. Why are you speeding up?
Mortal security was not a problem. There wasn't any.
Across a flat expanse of rocks and weeds, the relay station sat nestled at the base of Sutro Tower. The blocky brown building had clusters of white satellite dishes dotting its roof like toadstools after a rain shower. The door stood wide open. The windows were dark. The parking area out front was empty.
This isn't right, Reyna murmured. Didn't Tarquin say they were doubling security?
Doubling the flock, Meg corrected. But I don't see any sheep or anything.
That idea made me shudder. Over the millennia, I'd seen quite a few flocks of guardian sheep. They tended to be poisonous and/or carnivorous, and they smelled like mildewed sweaters.
Apollo, any thoughts?
Reyna asked. At least she could look at me now without bursting into laughter, but I didn't trust myself to speak. I just shook my head helplessly. I was good at that.
Maybe we're in the wrong place?
Meg asked. Reyna bit her lower lip.
Something's definitely off here. Let me check inside the station. Oramand Argentum can make a quick search. If we encounter any mortals, I'll just say I was hiking and got lost. You guys wait here. Guard my exit. If you hear barking, that means trouble.
She jogged across the field, Oramand Argentum at her heels, and disappeared inside the building. Meg peered at me over the top of her cat-eye glasses.
How come you made her laugh?
That wasn't my intention. Besides, it isn't illegal to make someone laugh.
You asked her to be your girlfriend, didn't you?
What? No! Sort of.
Yes. That was stupid.
I found it humiliating to have my love life criticized by a little girl wearing a unicorn and crossbones button. You wouldn't understand.
Meg snorted.
I seem to be everyone's source of amusement today.
I studied the tower that loomed above us. Up the side of the nearest support column, a steel-ribbed chute enclosed a row of rungs, forming a tunnel that one could climb through, if one were crazy enough, to reach the first set of crossbeams, which bristled with more satellite dishes and cellular antenna fungi. From there, the rungs continued upward into a low-lying blanket of fog that swallowed the tower's top half. In the white mist, a hazy black V floated in and out of sight. A bird of some sort. I shivered, thinking of the Strixes that had attacked us in the burning maze. But Strixes only hunted at nighttime. That dark shape had to be something else. Maybe a hawk looking for mice. The law of averages dictated that once in a while I'd have to come across a creature that didn't want to kill me, right? Nevertheless, the fleeting shape filled me with dread. It reminded me of the many near-death experiences I'd shared with Meg McCaffrey, and of the promise I'd made to myself to be honest with her. Back in the good old days of 10 minutes ago, before Reyna had nuked my self-esteem.
Meg, I said, last night, you saw Peaches.
I know.
She might have been talking about the weather. Her gaze stayed fixed on the doorway of the relay station.
You know, I repeated.
He's been around for a couple of days.
You've seen him?
Just sensed him. He's got his reasons for staying away. Doesn't like the Romans. He's working on a plan to help the local nature spirits.
And if that plan is to help them run away?
In the diffused gray light of the fog bank, Meg's glasses looked like her own tiny satellite dishes.
You think that's what he wants? Or what the nature spirits want?
I remembered the fawn's fearful expressions at People's Park, the dryad's weary anger.
I don't know. But Lavinia...
Yeah, she's with them.
Meg shrugged one shoulder.
The Centurions noticed her missing at morning roll call. They're trying to downplay it. Bad for morale.
I stared at my young companion, who had apparently been taking lessons from Lavinia in advanced camp gossip. Does Reyna know?
That Lavinia is gone? Sure. Where Lavinia went? Nah. I don't either, really. Whatever she and Peaches and the rest are planning, there's not much we can do about it now. We've got other stuff to worry about.
I crossed my arms. Well, I'm glad we had this talk, so I could unburden myself of all the things you already knew. I was also going to say that you're important to me, and I might even love you like a sister, but...
I already know that, too.
She gave me a crooked grin, offering proof that Nero really should have taken her to the orthodontist when she was younger.
It's okay. You've gotten less annoying, too. Look, here comes Reyna.
And so ended our warm family moment,
As the Praetor reemerged from the station, her expression unsettled, her greyhounds happily circling her legs as if waiting for jelly beans.
"The place is empty,"
Reyna announced. "Looks like everybody left in a hurry. I'd say something cleared them out,
like a bomb threat, maybe."
I frowned. "In that case, wouldn't there be emergency vehicles here?"
"The mist,"
Meg guessed. "Could have made the mortals see anything to get them out of here. Clearing the scene before..." I was about to ask before what, but I didn't want the answer. Meg was right, of course. The mist was a strange force. Sometimes it manipulated mortal minds after a supernatural event, like damage control. Other times it operated in advance of a catastrophe, pushing away mortals who might otherwise wind up as collateral damage, like ripples in a local pond, warning of a dragon's first footstep.
"Well," Reyna said, "if that's true, it means we're in the right place. And I can only think of one other direction to explore."
Her eyes followed the pylons of Sutro Tower until they disappeared into the fog.
"Who wants to climb first?"
Want had nothing to do with it. I was drafted. The ostensible reason was so Reyna could steady me if I started feeling shaky on the ladder. The real reason was probably so I couldn't back out if I got scared. Meg went last, I suppose because that would give her time to select the proper gardening seeds to throw at our enemies while they were mauling my face and Reyna was pushing me forward. Aurum and Argentum, not being able to climb, stayed on the ground to guard our exit, like the opposable thumb-lacking slackers they were. If we ended up plummeting to our deaths, the dogs would be right there to bark excitedly at our corpses. That gave me great comfort. The rungs were slippery and cold. The chute's metal ribs made me feel like I was crawling through a giant slinky. I imagined they were meant as some kind of safety feature, but they did nothing to reassure me. If I slipped, they would just be more painful things for me to hit on my way down. After a few minutes, my limbs were shaking. My fingers trembled. The first set of crossbeams seemed to be getting no closer. I looked down and saw we had barely cleared the radar dishes on the station's rooftop. The cold wind buffeted me around the cage, ripping through my hoodie, rattling the arrows in my quiver. Whatever Tarquin's guards were, if they caught me on this ladder, my bow and my ukulele would do me no good. At least a flock of killer sheep couldn't climb ladders. Meanwhile, in the fog high above us, more dark shapes swirled. Definitely birds of some kind. I reminded myself that they couldn't be Strixes. Still, a queasy sense of danger gnawed at my stomach. What if... "Stop it, Apollo," I chided myself. "There's nothing you can do now but keep climbing." I concentrated on one perilous, slippery rung at a time. The soles of my shoes squeaked against the metal. Below me, Meg asked, "Do you guys smell roses?" I wondered if she was trying to make me laugh. "Roses? Why, in the name of the 12 gods, would I smell roses up here?" Reyna said, "All I smell is Lester's shoes. I think he stepped in something." "A large puddle of shame," I muttered.
"I smell roses," Meg insisted.
"Whatever, keep moving." I did, since I had no choice. At last, we reached the first set of crossbeams. The catwalk ran the length of the girders, allowing us to stand and rest for a few minutes. We were only about 60 feet above the relay station, but it felt much higher. Below us spread an endless grid of city blocks, rumpling and twisting across the hills whenever necessary,
the streets making designs that reminded me of the Thai alphabet. The goddess Nong Kwok had tried to teach me their language once over a lovely dinner of spicy noodles, but I was hopeless at it. Down in the parking lot, Orim and Argentum looked up at us and wagged their tails. They seemed to be waiting for us to do something. The mean-spirited part of me wanted to shoot an arrow to the top of the next hill and yell, "Fetch!" But I doubted Reyna would appreciate that.
"It's fun up here," Meg decided.
She did a cartwheel, because she enjoyed giving me heart palpitations. I scanned the triangle of catwalks, hoping to see something besides cables, circuit boxes, and satellite equipment. Preferably something labeled, "Push this button to complete quest and collect reward." Of course not, I grumbled to myself. Tarquin wouldn't be so kind as to put whatever we needed on the lowest level. "Definitely no silent gods here," Reyna said.
"Thanks a lot."
She smiled, clearly still in a good mood from my earlier misstep into the puddle of shame. "I also don't see any doors. Didn't the prophecy say I'm supposed to open a door?"
"Could be a metaphorical one," I speculated.
"But you're right. There's nothing here for us." Meg pointed to the next level of crossbeams, another 60 feet up, barely visible in the belly of the fog bank.
"The smell of roses is stronger from up there," she said. "We should keep climbing."
I sniffed the air. I smelled only the faint scent of eucalyptus from the woods below us. My own sweat cooling against